You're listening to Talking Baseball with Ed Randall, presented by MLB.com. He's Ed Randall. He's talking baseball. What more do you need?
Hi, everybody. I'm Ed Randall, Big Ed and Nora's baby boy, and welcome back to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. Larry Doby, a great player with the Newark Eagles in the Negro Leagues, signed with Cleveland on July the 3rd, 1947, and played his first game just 2 days later in Chicago. That was just 11 weeks after Jackie Robinson made his debut in Brooklyn. Bob Feller, Doby's teammate, once referred to him as baseball's Buzz Aldrin, the second man on the moon. In a 13-year Hall of Fame career, he hit more than 250 homers, had 8 seasons of 20 or more homers, 5 seasons of 100 or more RBIs, twice led the American League in home runs, and was one of the finest center fielders of his time. Larry Doby was a key member of Cleveland's last championship club in 1948. He was so good, the club immortalized him, erecting a statue near Larry Doby Way at Progressive Field. So what an honor it is to welcome his namesake, Larry Doby Jr., to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. First things first, I read that you drove 7 hours from New Jersey to Cleveland for Game 1.
Yes, I did, Ed, and it was well worth it for Game 1.
I bet it was. And, of course, you never had to pay a toll because you're Larry Doby Jr., for goodness sakes.
There's no tolls on those roads, basically, so not me or anybody else either.
Talk, if you will, Larry, about the city of Cleveland and how it has seemingly always embraced your family.
Well, I guess, you know, the first thing I would say is that, you know, being the second one, all the media attention and not being obviously as big a city as New York, none of the, you know, the media attention didn't focus on Cleveland and what my father did, because it would be basically repeating the same news of that Jackie was going through. So they were a classic example of, you know, you're judged on how you act when nobody's watching. And they basically opened their arms to my dad, the fans. And I used to ask him a lot of questions about, you know, when he played, and he didn't really talk a lot about it. But one day he said to me that he never got booed in Cleveland. And I kind of looked at him with a puzzled look on my face because I couldn't believe it, because, you know, Mickey Mantle got booed in New York, and
right,
everybody gets booed.
Right.
But, you know, he didn't often talk about stuff like that. And so when he did, I listened, and I believed him, and I just think that they were with him. It was a group effort, and it was that they wanted him to succeed, that he was one of their players. So I think that it was a wonderful relationship between Cleveland and him, and I was fortunate enough to see how they treated him when he didn't play, and I could believe how they must have treated him when he did play.
And you never saw him play, but you still learned valuable lessons from him.
Yeah. I mean, my lessons are more father-son. You know, I mean, yes,
of course,
I did, was fortunate enough to have baseball lessons and things like that from him. But, you know, basically, I mean, I remember one of the things that resonated with me is he said, you treat people the way that they treat you, and do not let, you know, what I say about somebody or anybody else affect that. And a prime example of that lesson is that when I went to Duke University to play baseball, my baseball coach was Enos Slaughter.
Right.
And he was famed for being one of the people who, you know, didn't want to play with Jackie, signed a petition, spiked him, did this, that, and the other thing. But by the time I got to him, you know, he had changed his ways and grown into a different man, and I had a great relationship with him. And you know, it was an example of that lesson that my father taught me.
Sure, people can grow. Your dad went through everything, Larry, that Jackie did, but it didn't get as much attention. And perhaps for what you just said a couple of moments ago, because Jackie was in New York.
Right, right. And, it, you know, Cleveland's a little Midwest town, but, you know, he was in the same cities, some of the same cities as Jackie, and some of the cities that Jackie didn't go to, because there were a couple of American League cities like Washington that they didn't have a National League team and stuff. But I think he was so focused on trying to do a good job, because I think they realized that if they did a good job, they'd open the doors for others to come after them. And if they didn't do a good job and the so-called experiment failed, that they didn't know how long it would be before somebody else was given the opportunity.
And his significance often gets lost, Larry, in Jackie's long shadow. But what he did was no less significant. And exactly that. We can't imagine the pressure he was under to perform because, as you said, he had to succeed. There was no margin for error for those who could come after him.
Yep, exactly. You know, it's a totally different thing than other than those two guys that went through that anybody else did in baseball. So, yeah, I mean, his, like you say, the Jackie Robinson shadow was long. And is long and will continue to be. But, yeah, my father did basically the same things, and he's number two like Buzz Aldrin, and that's just the way it was. But he was very happy with his place in history, and he was very happy that because of his efforts that many came after him. So I'm glad that – I think the lack of recognition was by more – was other people that thought that he should have got it, but I think he was very secure with his spot.
And he once said, Larry, as you know this better than anybody, quote, "Nobody said we're going to be nice to the second black," unquote.
Exactly. I mean, I couldn't have put it any better. That's exactly true.
And I had the great good fortune to know your parents, as you know. And and your dad told stories about how when he got to Cleveland, he was taken around the room, I presume by the manager. And they were his teammates who didn't shake his hand. There were stories that he told of how he wasn't even allowed to dress with his teammates in certain cities, that I believe it was Washington, D.C., where he actually had to put on his uniform in the hotel and then get transported to the ballpark. This is unbelievable stuff.
And I mean, things, stories like that are so hard for me to fathom, you know, but that's the way it was. And, you know, again, the main thing was that it was given the opportunity and that he had to perform, and he knew if he did that it would pave the way, and if he didn't, it might be closed for a while. So those were just things that he had to endure, and that, you know, he did as best as he could with accepting them and trying to still perform on the field.
And yet, he, because of his strength of character and the man that he was, Larry, he was undeterred by this prejudice.
Yeah, and I think one thing, Ed, that was kind of funny to him is that he had heard about how it might be, but he thought in the back of his mind that it wouldn't be as bad as it was, you know, because he grew up in Patterson and in South Carolina, and he played, you know, with white kids and on integrated teams, and they had a lot of success, and they were friends, and he just figured that once they were, you know, on the same team, it kind of wouldn't be it wouldn't affect him, but he was wrong. But again, because of, you know, my mom being strength for him and believing in God, you know, and having some good teammates, you know, he was able to persevere.
Larry Doby Jr. is with us on Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. I'm wondering this. Did what he go through bother his family even more than it bothered him?
No, I don't, because, first of all, my mom was his rock, and I think that he left that stuff at the ballpark and, you know, tried to have a normal life with her. And all the kids that were, you know, most of us weren't born when he played, but the ones that were young. But I think what bothered the family or friends is that he didn't get the recognition, you know, but it didn't bother him. And that's the main thing. You know, it's like, if it doesn't bother him, we can't be that upset, because he's secure in his place in history and his contributions. And, you know, it's just the way it goes sometimes. It's America, and number one is celebrated, and number two is often forgotten.
Many times, regrettably. How old were you, Larry, when you first realized that your father was a historical figure?
Well, I guess I was in Little League, you know, so 6, 7, 8 years old, and, you know, you kind of knew that your father had a different job than most of your friends' fathers, except Dale Barris, because he was in my town, and his father did the same thing. But most fathers didn't do that, so you knew it was a little bit different. But the true historical, true, you know, the presence of him in history didn't really hit me till I was much older and kind of realized what he did and how it paved the way for things today and so forth and so on. But as a little kid, you just kind of think, okay, well, your father has a different job than other people do. And that was kind of it. But as you got older, you realized the historical, you know, significance of the whole thing.
And I can't imagine what must have gone through your mind at that time.
Well, extreme pride. You know, I mean, that's the one thing that his name and his legacy has enabled me to have, you know, is that I'm very proud of what he did. And I think one thing is really nice is that, you know, before him and Mr. Robinson came on the scene, kids of color couldn't dream about playing in the big leagues. And the two of them gave, you know, kids of color a chance to dream about playing. So, you know, life without dreams is really bad. You know, as long as you have your dreams, you have something to strive for. So the fact that they were able to give kids of color the ability to dream about that makes me so proud and always will.
As you should be. Larry Doby comes to the Cleveland Indians in 1947. In 1948, they beat the Boston Red Sox in a one-game playoff. They each had finished atop the American League. That had never happened before.
No.
And then he will forever be remembered, your father will, for his home run off Johnny Sain in the fourth game of the 48 series in Cleveland when the Indians beat the Boston Braves 2-1. And by the way, Larry, that game took 1 hour and 31 minutes.
Wow. Wow, but I had no idea. So that's two pitchers getting the ball and throwing strikes.
Exactly right. But yeah. but your dad had a great World Series and a memorable one when he hit the home run off of Johnny Sain. And to this day, people that were baseball fans in Cleveland remember that moment.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that was one of his greatest thrills in baseball. But even bigger for him was the picture of him and Steve Gromek that was taken after that game, of the two of them embracing. Mm. About winning the game, and that's something that he was probably most proud of. The fact that, you know, here's just two guys who came from, you know, totally different backgrounds, one from Michigan, one from New Jersey via South Carolina, who had a common goal and achieved it and were just happy and hugged. And that was a picture that he was forever proud of.
As Jackie Robinson was, and George Schuber was, as you know, the famous picture of Robinson crossing home plate in AAA in Montreal, and Schuber at home plate, the next hitter, about to extending his hand to a black man, which
right.
became also a moment in time, a historically significant moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's just things that today we take for granted that was so significant back then because it just had never been done before, not documented, you know. So I think it's just, it speaks to the kind of people that those two guys were.
I bet you wish you knew where that home run ball was and is today.
Of course I do. Yeah, that'd be nice to have that little pearl.
You played minor league ball for 3 years in the White Sox system in the late 70s and the early 80s. Tell us about that.
Yep. Good times. Good times. Ended a little bit too soon because of the curveball, but other than that, it was a good time.
Whom did you play with or against that we've come to know?
On my team in Appleton in the Midwest League, Ron Kittle, who was the Rookie of the Year in 1983 for the White Sox, Greg Walker, who was the first baseman for the White Sox for about 7 years, were teammates of mine, and some pitchers. Juan Augusto was a lefty pitcher who led the league in appearances 1 year. And we played against Von Hayes and Kent Herbeck and a bunch of guys. So it was a pretty good A-ball league.
And what are you doing now?
Now I'm a union stagehand for a local one in New York City and mostly work at Madison Square Garden and also at Wicked at the Gershwin Theater.
That's great.
Yeah.
In Cleveland, there's a Larry Doby RBI program, and there is the Larry Doby Cleveland State University Baseball Scholarship Fund, each of which was established in 1994 when Cleveland retired his number. And those, Larry, are among his legacies.
Yep. It's nice to have his name, you know, give opportunities to others who are trying to pursue, you know, athletics and education, because that's what his two, pillars were. So it's really nice. And I think he never forgot the opportunities he had and the coaches that took interest in him when he was a kid, and the fact that, you know, programs in his name would do the same for the youth of today. He'd be, you know, extremely proud of that.
When somebody mentions the name Larry Doby, there is such respect for that name. When you are asked your name, Larry Doby, what kinds of reactions do you get?
Well, some people have no idea who it is. And then some people, you know, of course, say, are you any relation? And I say, yeah. And normally the ones that do know, you know, it's a very positive thing. And, you know, a lot of, you know, good memories and respect, like you said.
He was a great man. You were lucky to have him as a dad.
I certainly know that. I didn't get to see him play. But, yes, as a dad, I was very lucky.
Larry, what a joy to have you on the show. Thank you so much for your kindness. So that'll do it for Larry Doby Jr. and myself on MLB.com. If you're on the move, thanks for the ride. And thanks for listening to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball.